If you're just joining us, we're talking about where chocolate comes from and the complexities around how we source cocoa. That's the main ingredient in chocolate. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Most of the world's chocolate comes from Africa, specifically Ghana and Ivory Coast, where more than 2 million children work in hazardous conditions growing cocoa. And so big brands like Nestle and Hershey, they have programs to help improve farmers' lives. Did you know about human rights and environmental issues in the chocolate industry? Has it changed the way you shop for any chocolate? We're at 800-642-1234. There's a line for you to join in. Journalist Simran Sethi is the creator and host of The Slow Melt, which Saveur magazine named the best food podcast of 2017. And she's the author of Bread, Wine, Chocolate, The Slow Loss of Foods We Love. Simran, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate. It's a pleasure to be here.
You've talked with farmers in Ecuador. You've talked with a whole lot of cocoa farmers over the years. What have they told you about their work, their environment, what they do?
Well, you know, there's not one single expression of their lives. And I think that's really important because we oftentimes maybe think of people who are far away, who are growing these crops that we don't see growing in the ground as a monolith. And it's a very different experience for farmers, for example, in Ivory Coast and Ghana, who are growing commodity cocoa or cacao. The cacao is the pod-shaped fruit that is processed into cocoa and then is, of course, a primary component of chocolate. You know, they're growing it for some of those big chocolate companies like Mondelez, Nestle, and Mars. Then you have, farmers in Latin America that are growing what is known as fine or flavor cacao predominantly. And that's the more specialized cocoa that you'll find in, you know, what we call craft chocolate bars. But I think what's important to remember is that most of the cocoa that's grown in the world is grown by small farmers on small plots of land. And cocoa is a crop that is that needs kind of a mass to ferment. So we're seeing a lot of these farmers very quickly losing any control over what it is that they're growing. And what I mean by that is they will pass the cocoa on to a central, you know, fermentation and processing area. And then from there, you'll see the price, you know, increase. But the farm gate price, the price that farmers are receiving on the ground, is excessively low. It's between 3% and 6% of what we pay for a chocolate bar. And it's not improving despite the attention that's been placed on the impoverishment of farmers.
So are the profits just going to the big companies then? Like where is the money going in that supply chain?
It disproportionately goes toward the end of the supply chain. So it is to the manufacturers, it is to retailers, and it's a price that's stayed steady. So if you think about the fact that cocoa is a really, you know, it's a commodity crop, the price is actually quite volatile. There was a tremendous price drop a couple of years ago, the price dropped by about a third, and we never saw the price of our chocolate bars going down, you know, so all of that then, of course, gets absorbed as profit for some of these major companies. And you know, it's not that they're not trying to address some of these challenges, but I think fundamentally, when we look at some of the biggest issues that we see in cocoa, you know, whether it's deforestation or extreme child labor, these are issues of poverty. If you're in a situation where, you know, you're going to need to cut down trees in order to grow a crop to sustain your livelihood or keep your child out of school to, again, sustain your life and make sure those children are fed. I mean, these are not easy decisions, and these aren't ones that anyone wants to make. But the fact is that, you know, despite policy initiatives, despite a lot of talk from the industry, these problems are not going away. And in many instances, particularly around deforestation and extreme child labor, they're getting worse.
Well, before we talk about child labor, I want to go to Venezuela. You've spent some time there as well. And Venezuela isn't just in turmoil, but they have what's known as the Criollo coffee beans, which are really highly coveted. What did you find there?
So I was invited to come and meet cocoa farmers in Venezuela because of the work that I've done. And I remember at a certain point emailing with the person who is overseeing the cooperative that said invited me. And I said, you know, I don't think this is a good time. And he said, we don't think there's going to be a good time. Please come. And I was there for 2 weeks, and I had the opportunity to meet people who are really going through an extraordinarily difficult time. I mean, if you think about waking up every day and not knowing if you're going to have water, if you're going to have electricity, if you're going to, you know, be able to get to your workplace because of, you know, another demonstration, you're threatened with physical violence, the volatility of your currency is so crazy that you're, you know, actually trading in a completely foreign currency, which would be the US dollar, that there are all these barriers to very simple things. And I'm so humbled, honestly, to see that this variety that you were describing, Criollo, it's a different kind of cocoa bean. So first of all, the reason that I love this crop so much is because I've been eating it my whole life, but when I went into the forest, I couldn't identify it in nature, you know, and it's this funny looking bumpy pod, and you crack it open, and then there are these pulpy bits, you know, and what we consume in chocolate are the seeds. We ferment and dry and roast and process these seeds into this glorious substance that we know and love. And most of those seeds are like a purple color when you break them open, and they're really bitter. Like, there's no sensation of chocolate anywhere near this fruit. But the Criollo seeds are white, and they're quite precious in terms of how they're grown and also in flavor. It's a really delicate flavor. I know we kind of tend to think of chocolate as one flavor, but it's just as complex as wine, if not more complex, actually. The number of aroma compounds that have been identified has been more than that of wine. And so you can get all these great flavor notes out of cocoa if you allow for them, you know, if you don't want them processed for consistency. So when it comes to Criollo, it's like caramel, it's nutty, it's dulce de leche, it's this really particular fine flavor. And you think about all these challenges in Venezuela, and then there are these farmers and these chocolate makers, you know, because it's getting increasingly difficult to export that cocoa, who are working with this product and just making world-class chocolate. I mean, I can't say enough how impressed I was by the entire group of people I met from you know, farm to bar, who are supporting and sustaining this crop because they recognize what they have. You know, this is a cocoa that's endemic to Venezuela. It's precious, it's delicious, and they're not letting it go despite all these challenges.
A very precious commodity. We're talking with Simran Sethi, who has traveled the world reporting on cocoa farming and the chocolate industry. We're getting insights on where our chocolate comes from and how cocoa is sourced. You can join in. Do you care about certification labels like Fair Trade or Rainforest Alliance? Do you think they're good, or do you think they don't go far enough? Is it important for you to know about the people who produce your food? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Simran, chocolate is a more than $100 billion industry, huge industry, but most cocoa farmers, as you mentioned, are in poverty, and the vast majority of cocoa farmers work at the margins. Where do the children come in? What is happening here about child labor?
Well, it's a complicated situation, so I don't want to give any impression that this is an easy problem to solve, because it does fundamentally come down to structural poverty. It is something that we can address, but right now there are about, you know, 2 million children working in cocoa. And the average income for cocoa farmers in Ghana and Ivory Coast, the top three producers in the world are Ivory Coast, Ghana, and Indonesia. In West Africa, they, you know, research shows that farmers earn less than $1 a day. So while we have had legislation, specifically the Harkin-Engel Protocol that was developed back in 2001, that was, you know, the goal of that legislation, and that's U.S. legislation, was to eliminate the worst forms of child labor. And in response to this, you know, there was a nonprofit form, the International Cocoa Initiative. And, you know, the idea was that we would reduce child labor by 70% by 2020, right? So when you're back in 2001, 2020 is far enough away that you can make these commitments and then just just sort of nudge them along. And then progressively, that's exactly what's happened. All these major chocolate companies that said, oh, we're not quite there yet with our targets. We're going to push this down the road a little bit further. But in order to achieve these targets, you're going to have to tackle poverty. And in order to tackle poverty, you're going to have to be willing to redistribute the wealth. This, you mentioned $100 billion goes into the confectionery industry. So that includes, you know, not only chocolate bars, but think of anything that has chocolate in them, you know, chocolate covered stuff, bonbons, et cetera, et cetera. And if you're not willing to reallocate some of those profits, you're not going to see the kinds of changes that we need. So I think that's something that's really important for consumers to remember. And also the fact that, you know, this stuff doesn't exist in a bubble. This is about getting consuming countries. So governments like the United States, governments across Europe involved and saying, like, we need this to change, as well as governments on the ground. So
you need
cooperation. Needs to be a comprehensive, exactly.
Cooperation
effort.
Among governments. And certainly mm-hmm. these companies have to have then buy-in, not just from the U.S., but from, you know, these communities in Africa.
The U.S. is important because so many of the major manufacturers are headquartered here, and we're also a major consumer. Americans eat about 10 pounds of chocolate per year. So, it's not like we aren't important in this and we should, you know, like sort of throw up our hands and say it's not our problem. It very much is, but it's certainly not ours alone.
We're exploring certification labels, the government relations, responsible sourcing of cocoa. Simran Sethi has traveled the world reporting on the chocolate industry, on cocoa farming. Do you care about where your chocolate comes from? Do you think labels like Rainforest or Alliance are keeping the marketplace ethical, or do they not go far enough on regulation? Where do you buy your chocolate from and why? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a moment with journalist Simran Sethi right here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show this Thanksgiving. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and our focus is chocolate. You probably have some within arm's reach right now, and it's no wonder it's one of the world's favorite foods. The global chocolate industry, as we said, worth about $100 billion. And according to the National Confectioners Association, it takes about 400 cocoa beans to make 1 pound of chocolate. So we're looking at the supply chain, how the cocoa is sourced. With your questions, do you think about where your chocolate comes from and whether its main ingredient is sourced fairly? We're at 800-642-1234. The Slow Melt podcast host, Simran Sethi, stays with us. Let's go to the phones now. Willie is joining us from St. Paul, Minnesota. Hi, Willie.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm really thankful that you're tackling this because it's an important issue. But I think what my idea was is that personally, I don't really care about the sourcing, the big global issues. There was a story about jewel pods and those getting thrown away the story prior. So it's hard for me, like as an individual, to take that pressure on as the consumer. But I'm really glad that people see the issue and people like you are out there, you know, addressing it.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Well,
like,
I think
scale, I don't care. I'm glad you have it.
Yeah, Willie, it makes a good point at the consumer level. You know, what should we do when we look at these problems in the food industry and especially here around chocolate? What do you do as a consumer?
Absolutely. And thanks, Willie, because that is for keeping it real. You know, it is a challenge. We're all trying to balance a million things. But I think one thing to start to pay attention to is how much are you paying for a chocolate, right? And we've been conditioned to think that this should be a super cheap product. But let me tell you, it is so incredibly difficult to grow, to process, and to make chocolate. Like, I am so humbled and grateful that there are people out there doing all of this, farmers and amazing chocolate makers because this substance brings me so much joy. And here we are on Thanksgiving. And I think some of the quick things that we can do is start to look at, this is told to me by an economist actually from the International Cocoa Organization, look at the percentage of cocoa in your chocolate bar. If you're really committed to keeping this crop going, then choose a higher percentage of cocoa. Also, move toward some of these more specialized chocolate makers. Craft chocolate is a really fuzzy term. There's no kind of oversight over it, but these are the makers that are really committed to flavor, right? So when you think about something like, you know, a large scale bar that you'll find like at the checkout counter in a drugstore, that's really about consistency, right? And a tremendous sugar high. On legally, you know, a chocolate bar that is named chocolate has to have 10% cocoa content. But when you're looking at some of these craft chocolate makers, you're talking about, you know, upwards of 50%, 60%, 70%. And onwards of cocoa content, right? So having a higher percentage of cocoa means that you're going to, of course, be supporting cocoa farmers a bit more and thinking about the price that you're paying and thinking about what it is actually worth to you. Because one of the things that really struck me when I was in Ecuador, specifically writing my book, was meeting a farmer named Vicente Norero. And what he said to me was, "You're eating my story. You're eating my history and my work and my hopes and my legacy." And that has been so profound for me. I can't do this with every food. But if I can find a few that I really care about and start to consider what that supply chain looks like, there's ample information online. You can look at a bunch of things I've read and see what we can start to do to make this shift. Because without consumer engagement, it's not going to happen. You know, and it might be as simple as shooting an email off to, you know, your favorite chocolate company. It might be getting curious about, you know, different kinds of chocolates, tasting different places, right? You'll see origins. A chocolate from Madagascar, you know, with cocoa from Madagascar will be very different than one from Ecuador. One, the Madagascan will be tart and fruity, you know, have these great undertones. You know, the one from Ecuador might be more brownie-like and fudgy. I mean, there's a whole world to explore here that is crazy packed with flavor. And that deliciousness is something that we can also use as a springboard for supporting a more sustainable cocoa industry.
Well, let's take another call now. Lori is joining us from Hale's Corner. Hi, Lori. What is your connection to this industry?
Well, I am so glad I got to talk to you. Stephen Wallace has been, well, I call him a friend of mine. He was an exchange student from the United States that went to Ghana.
Yep.
He stayed there. Yep, he stayed there for quite a while and loved it, and he wanted to do something for it. And they have a wonderful source of chocolate there. But the people there didn't get a whole lot of income from it. They got to pick the cacao beans, you know, but they didn't get to have a plant and process it and distribute it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it sounds like because, Lori, that you have more of a personal connection, you think about chocolate differently. Is that true?
It is. And it's a little pricier. I think they've had a few problems with the cacao product up the plant. You know, there've been weather conditions that have given it a problem over in Ghana. But Steve Wallace has gone around and he's talked about beyond fair trade. Mm. And I think that that's still another thing we should be thinking about, don't you?
Lori,
absolutely.
Yeah, thank you. What can we do on the issue of fair trade?
Well, certifications are a great first step. So if you're standing in front of the chocolate aisle and not sure what to do, look for some of those certifications. Organic certification is specifically about the chemicals that are put onto the crop, right? So I don't want to conflate these things. Fair trade is the most established certification. It requires that cocoa traders pay farmer cooperatives, not individual farmers, a minimum price plus an additional premium for their crop. But what research has shown, and this is research from Fair Trade International, is that even farmers who are selling cocoa with fair trade certification are many of them are still below, their household earning is still below the World Bank's extreme poverty line. And so, again, this goes back to a bigger system. So I would say if that's your first point of entry, definitely look for certifications. There's, you know, there's Rainforest Alliance, which also looks at a lot of the environmental challenges. There's Fair Trade. This is a great first step. Those certification protocols are not focused on flavor, right? And they are looking at farmer cooperatives. I would also suggest looking at some of those smaller direct trade models, the one that Lori mentioned that Steve's doing. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Steve's trying to manufacture chocolate at the origin, which is also incredibly important. Look and see, where is your chocolate made? Look and see, is there a percentage listed? Because when you see this information, an origin or a percentage, you can start to think these are signals, right? This company is trying to tell you something about the place and about the people behind the bar. And if you're going to stay in the like 99, you know, or $1.50 realm, you're probably not going to be moving toward a organization or a company that's trying to pay more fair prices. But there are extraordinary companies out there that are doing really, that are working very, very hard to try to elevate farmers as not only like these early players in the supply chain, but central to our experience of chocolate. So look at the story and start to pay attention. And I think what you'll find is, you know, it's going to enhance your chocolate making experience. That was one thing I really loved hearing when I was researching another chapter of my book on cocoa, and it was, on coffee. And, yeah. And, you know, an expert said to me, like, a delicious cup of coffee is only delicious if it's just, you know, if it's fair and it's made well. And I know that farmers were also cared for in this process.
Well, we only have a few moments left with you, but I want to just touch for a moment on the environment and deforestation. Is that an issue for making room for more cocoa farms?
It is, because most certainly, production has increased, but what we're seeing is that production has increased at an extraordinary cost. So in there's an incredible NGO called Mighty Earth, and they did satellite mapping in Indonesia, in Ivory Coast, in Ghana. And what they found, like, for example, in Ivory Coast, is it's lost 85% of its forests between 1990 and 2015. And Ghana stands to lose all of their remaining forests outside of its national parks in the next decade. So this is another problem that we need to kind of look at and tackle. The solutions are out there, but it takes economic and political will and consumer persistence to make it happen.
Simran, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Simran Sethi is creator and host of the podcast The Slow Melt. She writes about food sustainability and social change. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.